If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and/or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Why not write a children's book during COVID? Karen Bellinger Richmond did. Clara's Curiosity and Her Foxy Friends is the first in its series that she continues to write from her summer home in Plymouth, Massachusetts. Karen grew up in Biddeford, Maine, and her fondest childhood memories are walks in the woods with her mom, dad, and younger sister to pick yummy fiddleheads and beautiful lupines. She has always had a desire to write children's books that kids could love to read over and over, that pique their curiosity for adventure, encourage them to read great books about the things they want to learn more about, write stories and draw all that inspires them, or simply be outside, play, and laugh. Karen's career in educational publishing has made her mindful that her children's books would also become a resource for teachers to use for shared reading aloud with their students. Karen lives in Dedham, Massachusetts with her husband and is completing her next book on Clara's Curiosity series. She is anxious to meet curious young readers like you at her upcoming book signings. Without further ado, Karen Bellinger Richmond. Hello, hello. Karen, welcome. Can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit, tell our listeners a little bit about your journey to becoming a children's author?
Certainly. Thank you for having me join you on the podcast today, Victoria. It's been something I've been wanting to do for such a long time, so I'm so glad to be here today with you and having your listeners join us. My journey starting out as a children's book author happened like probably a lot of people were trying to find themselves during the pandemic. And being a book author was something I had in my vision, but I thought it was a lot, many more years off. I did work in educational publishing. I worked at Heinemann Publishing for over 30 years. I also worked as a consultant for Highlights Children's Magazine and many other publishing firms. So I was always in the background of education and watching a lot of professional development and training with teachers and being in classrooms. In that career path really kind of led me to wanting to write a storybook that would help children with difficulties that I experienced as a child, being a young reader, being kind of like pushed into that arena of, okay, you should be ready for a chapter book now, but I really wasn't. I really needed that picture book to still guide my reading. So with the pandemic and my consulting career getting put on hiatus, I found myself struggling because I'm a busy person by nature. And I think that's true for so many educators. And I really think of all of us as educators, no matter what role we play, we're all educating in some fashion. And I had to keep busy. So fortunately, my four-year-old great niece called me on the phone and she was like, Auntie Kay, I saw a fox through my window. And I just started continuing my conversations with her over the phone because, as like everybody, we're missing our families and we want to find that way to stay connected. And this little story of hers that she brought to me just became magical. And I was learning from her. I was learning all about this Maine gray fox. She was sending me photos of it. And I just thought, what a great way to teach other children and find out what they're curious about in nature. So that was kind of how this all kind of unfolded at a time of my life I didn't expect it to. But I'm overjoyed by the fact that at 4 years old, she was, you know, so curious and wanting to learn more and wanting to find out, is this really a gray fox? How do I get more information? And having a conversation on the phone with a ranger from Maine, you know, I got the two of them in touch, and it was just kind of an amazing unfolding. And then the Maine rangers at Maine Wildlife were so fascinated by our engagement together that they honored me with using the materials in the back of the story that share specific facts about the Maine gray fox. So it's just developed into one unfolding of a wonderful thing into another.
That's amazing. Amazing. Yeah. So you said the idea of writing a children's book came during COVID. And then Is it your niece?
Yeah, it's my great niece. My great niece, Kendra's daughter. My great niece.
4 years old.
Named after my mom, Clara, who also passed during the pandemic. So there's kind of been a very, the fact that we still say my mom's name every day, and that
middle
of the book is Clara's curiosity. I feel like there's, you know, some kind of pull there too.
Absolutely. So where was it in these interactions that was like, I'm going to do this. Now I'm going to write this children's book. I mean,
right.
Where did that transition happen?
I wasn't sure it was something I wanted to share publicly at first. I wasn't sure. I think this happens to most authors. We start doubting our abilities and the value of what we've written. And I went away with a few editor friends of mine to get a publishing feedback, because I already had feedback from my family. But, you know, families are going to give you what you want to hear. So I thought, okay, let's bring it to the education side and to my peers. So I did that weekend getaway, and I got really good feedback, you know, in both directions, things that I could change or ways that I think they saw my excitement of how I wanted to build the story into even more teaching opportunities, that I really wanted the story to not just be a storybook that we read aloud to our students or our children, but that I wanted it to be a learning opportunity that educators could take forward based off the story. That excited them. And I started getting the feeling like I might really have something here based on their responses to me. So I went one step further, and this is really the pin and, you know, the head on the nail, or however you want to call it. But I decided to get a group of children together, and I went to the Plymouth Library and reserved a boardroom and invited a whole group of children that I thought were the appropriate age that would read my book. And before I even submitted it to any kind of publishing industry, I decided I wanted to hear what kids had to say about my book. So at the Plymouth Library, we gathered with a group of gals, and the moms were so wonderful to get everybody there. And the children were so enthralled with me that I would ask them, do you think I should publish this book? What do you like? What do you don't like? Oh, what would you change in my book? What words were your favorite words? What would you draw on your own if you were going to think about this book, but it wasn't in front of you? What did you have mentally in your head that you saw that really kind of captivated you? I asked them like 7 key questions. And because children are wonderful children and they're so honest, it was so wonderful. All I gave them was little post-it notes. And all of the answers were on this post-it note. And like, I'm like, you can use multiple post-it notes. So many of them like put all their answers on these little post-it notes. But I came back what I think was probably the best feedback I could have gotten from anybody. Forget about my peers, forget about educators. These were the kids that were either going to read this book again or never pick it up again. And what I felt so powerful about was that they asked me when I was going to write the next one before I even birth. And to me, that was the answer. They already wanted to know what would happen next with Clara. To me, that was the best indicator I could have gotten.
Oh, so, what a gift.
Yeah,
and so smart of you to go to the children, to the source.
Yeah. I think when I saw Clara talking to me about ideas and stuff, and I thought, okay, that's Clara, and it's so personal to her. And I thought, what would a group of people completely removed from the fact that it's their story, how would they feel about it? So it was wonderful that I had a good friend who was involved with like a Girl Scout group and everything. It was, you know, I went to her and she really worked hard to help me get this collective group together. And I wanted them recognized because I every time I read my book, I tell children, you too can be an author, you too can be an illustrator. If you love stories, be a storyteller, whether it's verbal, whether you put it on page. I believe reading goes hand in hand with writing. So if we get kids writing, they're more apt to read. If they're readers, they're more apt to write. It's not one before the other. It's collaborative. You know, and it was interesting at this event because I handed out journals that I gave these children afterwards as a thank you gift. And all of their names are printed in the front of my published book now. And they were very excited to see their names there because I said, you were on this journey with me. You know, you did this with me. So it's
incredible.
Nice to hear from them every once in a while on my website. Yes.
Yeah. Lots of layers. I love it.
So to me, that was it. That was it. I was on a mission after that. Yeah.
I'm sure. And it sounds like the mission is not over. So you grew up in Maine.
No, not at all, actually. Yeah, Biddeford, Maine. And that's where Clara lives. And that's where she saw her family of foxes right outside her bedroom window. And there's a beautiful, like, little valley that comes down with all these huge granite rocks piled up. And three of them are nestled just right. And she can just see them playing and rolling. And because she's high and they're low, she gets such a great visual point. But like any child, one thing that I really wanted to stress in my book was safety. Because like any child, it looks like a puppy when these little foxes are out there. So they want to run and pat them or they want to feed them. And that's not necessarily great for our wildlife, you know.
Right.
I thought those messages were important to include because we had those conversations on the phone together when we were interacting. So
how did your childhood experiences influence the story that you eventually wrote?
Yeah. So believe it or not, and it's sometimes I get a little choked up sometimes with this part of the story. I had a wonderful teacher. Luckily, by fourth grade, she realized my reading disability. And I had already been advancing in grade level after grade level when I really probably should not have. But I think that's pretty true for a lot of people who tell a story like mine. So she pulled me aside one day and she just found a way to connect with me that was very different than what educators were being told to do with struggling readers. And she said to me, I know you love music. What's that song? And of course, this is much before lyrics.com. So she had me writing down the song words to the music that I loved. So she had me writing. She had me get up in the classroom and read the lyrics to a song that I loved. And it took away that weird stigma I had about I can't write, I can't read. And she built my confidence up. And because of her, you know, because she recognized that would drive me around the corner and remove that intimidation I had. Of course, I didn't understand that as a child, that that's what she was doing. I understood it more when I started working in educational publishing, that she was way before her time and that, you know, I'm so thankful to this day that this was a teacher I had once upon a time who went outside of the teaching world, took extra time with me, had me type up the lyrics with that blue Mimil, I don't forget what it's called.
Oh,
that
yes.
Blue paper.
Do you remember? We're showing our age. Do you
remember? Yeah. She would have me stay after school. I mean, usually if I was staying after school, it was because I didn't do something I was supposed to do. So it was a negative thing. Here I was now staying after school to help her with what she said was an assignment for the whole classroom that I was going to share. So she started really giving me confidence and removing the forcefulness of getting into that chapter book and just letting me find where I read. Where do I read? I don't it in a chapter book. That's not where I feel the ability to do so. And I really needed the pictures and stuff. And so she'd let me bring in the albums with the covers and read the cover, she said. Well, we do that today. We read the picture book, read the art, read the... So she was waiting for her time. And it was beautiful how she understood that me talking about something would relate to me maybe writing about it. She was brilliant.
Brilliant. That's so yeah. Brilliant. Get goosebumps.
And, so, you know, I thought if I'm going to do a book, I'm going to maybe do a book that it's not out there, because traditional publishing tells you that a picture book only has a certain number of words in it. Mm. And it also has a certain cadence to it. And I kind of bended those rules quite a bit. But
as we should, right?
Yeah, I feel like I'd rather, if this helps, you know, a fourth grader or a third grader who's not yet reading in a chapter book, like we hope they will, that this will advance them somehow and get them curious about nature. And then they'll go to the library and they'll get that bigger book and then the bigger book and move on from there.
It's just amazing. So I want to shift a little bit to Clara and the Foxes.
Sure.
So I understand that Clara was inspired again by your granddaughter. Is it your grand? Yes. Nice. And her encounter with the Fox family. Can you tell us the story behind Clara's curiosity and her foxes and her foxy friends?
Sure. So her parents are the type of parents that bring her out for nature walks quite a bit. You know, at 4 years old, even, they would go for walks, and they're very outdoors people. Her mom is a women's national like disc golfer. So they're outdoors a lot. And so Clara is an only child, but she loves animals. She has two cats, which you'll find in the storybook, Domino and Snugs. She has been read to quite a bit as a child. Lots of books been put in front of her, and not just storybooks, but reference books. She's understood from a very young age, like research and finding out more facts about foxes. But when, of course, we weren't engaging as groups anymore and she was home and we weren't really leaving the home a lot, she really only had those foxes sitting out there and every day making that her journey, making that her day of adventure, because they weren't going out and they weren't, you know, going to do all of those things and trying to get pictures of the foxes and using her binoculars. But she's just got that animal love in her, and she's curious about animals and how they live and how, where did they get food? And she always had those kinds of questions. So
that's it's incredible to think about, because you think about, I'm sort of imagining her, you know, inside looking out in a window.
Yeah.
It's almost like watching TV in a sense. It's like in watching natural TV.
Right, right.
You use the word curiosity. Clara's curiosity. Can you tell me, there's so many words you can use, could have used.
Yeah.
Why curiosity?
Because I want her to never lose that. I hope we all continue with our curiosity. It's what continues us to ask the right questions and dig deeper. And I want us to discover things, whether we're adults or children. And I think curiosity brings us to that discovery moment. And I don't know about you, but when I'm out in the woods and I see something on a nature walk that I've never seen before, I want to identify it. I want to figure out, you know, what kind of mushroom was that? Did you see the color of it? It was so crazy red. And, you know, and it was like, is it poisonous? What is it? You know, is it, can you eat this? And then one time when I was on a walk with Clara, she said, what is that, Aunt Karen? Why are you so excited that you saw that fern? I said, well, it's called a fiddlehead. And then she was so curious about, what's a fiddlehead? And then I told her this whole story about growing up with my mom and dad in Maine. And every May, we would go out for fiddlehead in the woods and find this place and that you can eat them. And then she was like, how did you know you could eat them? So it's just, to me, she's curious. Like her questions are very, go beyond and beyond. Then we wanted to try the fiddlehead, you know, and she wanted to know what they tasted like. And you know, how do you cook them? Are there different recipes? And it's amazing what your curiosity does to you, you know? So I think it's really something we want children to say, Are you a curious person? If you are, if you're not, why aren't you a curious person? What can we do to make you a curious person or find what you're curious about, you know? And then I think that's what it is. I think by nature, we're all curious. We haven't found necessarily what we're curious about yet. And at a young age, it's interesting to ask that question to young children, especially when they're outside in nature. They usually find that thing that's going to drive them to the next question. So,
and that it is sort of like a domino. I mean,
it is.
How you're describing it as sort of that one question that leads to the next question, the next question. How can we help our listeners who are both parents and educators kind of lean into that, even with your book and just taking your book into teaching? And
right. So I tell everybody that my mission is, you know, education. However, I worry very much about mental health today. And so I tell everyone, you really need to think about taking books outside into nature and find green space. And so if you do this with children, there's this natural thing that happens. Find a nice tree, find place where you'll have enough room if it's a group of children, or maybe just a place outside of your home that's a quick little nature walk that's not too far, so it becomes more reasonable for you to build it into some day plan. And get under a tree and read that book. It doesn't have to be my book, but I'd love it if it was. But you can bring out some binoculars with you. The child doesn't even need to know. Don't stress the fact that we're putting, because we are going to the goal of putting electronics down and putting books in their hands and binoculars. That's really the mission. But do it in green space. Get them out of the house. Get some fresh air. If you bring them down a path in a forest, there's going to be something after you read a story to them. Either the story's going to spark something if it's a nature story, or something right in front of their visual eyes. When children are given something else in their hands, it's automatic that they're going to want to figure that tool out. So binoculars are that engagement where they are now, it's an extension of their body and they're seeing things they can't see. As we all do with binoculars. Oh, there's a bird in the tree. What kind of bird is it? Where do you think it came from? Does it stay here in the winter? Does it go somewhere else? All these wonderful things that you can engage with kids. I do these kind of nature walks and I call it Read the Forest. And they go out with their binoculars. And I tell them, you're reading with your eyes. Because if we let kids use their natural senses first, it's much easier for them to then want to write their own story about their nature experience. So I encourage all of the parents and all of the educators listening to find that book you want to read under a tree. Bring the binoculars, bring pencils, and bring easy little notepads that the kids can write and draw on. Make enough time that after you finish reading your little nature story, so you're asking them to turn their hearing up and listen. Because as you're reading to them, you're asking them to listen for sounds. And at the end of your story, you can say, what did you hear while I was reading? Did you hear something? Did you hear a bird? You know, even if it only takes 1 minute, they're going to tell you they heard so many things. It's amazing. But I was out in the woods with a group of Girl Scouts, and I found some girls so fascinated by one area or another. It was like, the extremes were crazy. We found an eagle's nest, which was very fortunate for us, way up high in a tree. And one of the little girls, she ended up drawing a picture and writing a story about how much poop there was under the tree. That was her story. And that's all she could talk about. Did you see all the poop? And then she didn't want to stand under the tree because she was afraid she was going to. And that was her story. And that was her drawing. And every other child wanted to draw the eagle or the bird or the tree. So it's so interesting. And I'm like, and she's just like, who knew they poop so much? And she just went on and on with the poop. I couldn't get her to think about the bird for a minute. But, you know, but that's, it's what drove her to want to write a story afterwards, you know? And just like, what do they eat that they poop so much?
Right.
It was interesting to me that, you know. And another girl was like, she collected a pine cone and walked out with it. And I said, that's a nature gift. And she was trying to draw the pine cone that she brought out of nature with her. Mm. So You know, I think there's probably many ways and many different ways that we can find to engage with children to build on their curiosity. That just happens to be my favorite way.
Yeah, incredible. Mm-hmm. Incredible. So at Outdoor Classrooms, we talk a lot about, again, curiosity.
Yeah.
Literally being the beginning of learning. What do you think happens when adults give children that permission to follow their curiosity outdoors?
Some of them will struggle with it. And yeah. Some of them, I do find, you know, at the beginning, you're pulling them. But I mm-hmm. think once they cross into a place where they realize that you've brought them to this magical place, right? And they're really paying attention to something and they see their peers just doing what I call close reading and discovery and exploration. I think if we use the right words, there is very important adjectives that we must use: adventure, curiosity, discovery, explore. I mean, these are, they're explorers. They're going out into nature to explore. If you use nature hike, the adult words we tend to tag to these things, less interesting to them. Yeah. But I do find that once you give them that permission, we're not telling them, today we're going to go out and we're going to just draw trees or we're just going to draw flowers. You're asking them to go out and find what it is that they're curious about. You're giving them permission to seek their own mission and their own adventure.
Wow.
So I think we have to keep things more broad and be less restrictive in nature.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's just, it's an invitation to kind of let kids be kids.
And exactly.
I love that you talk about the binoculars being an extension of their bodies. Like it gives their hands something. Because I think that maybe a lot of educators think, oh, they're going to go outside. They're going to be so distracted. I love how Clara uses binoculars, also a notebook and books, and then you bringing in books and really bringing in the knowledge at the end of the book. I think that's just absolutely brilliant.
Oh,
how do you hope that your story inspires more observers, investigators, writers, artists? I know that you've touched on this, but can you develop that a little bit more?
Yeah. So I've been working really hard to figure out that way that I stay connected to these children that are excited about learning in nature and bringing Claire's curiosity outside with them and finding other nature books that they love. And so on my website, I've created a place for the children to submit their stories and their drawings to. And that's where I encourage them that if they've done this and I put it in my newsletters, then they too are a published author or illustrator because it's visually out there in the public world. I've only had one student who asked how much royalty she got. And I thought, oh my gosh, she's a smart cookie.
Not the fear in the making.
Yeah. So I promised her book two because that is not, as most authors will tell you, doesn't flow like we would think it does in the publishing world.
She's clever.
So that's where I'm hoping the curiosities keep going, because I'm finding that it is similar new children authors that I'm getting that submit the same, like, oh, I got a new story for you. And so once they do it with me once, I find that they're sending me more stories. So I know that their curiosity is continuing and they're finding a place where it feels meaningful for them to share it. So if we want our children to stay very curious and continue on that path and that journey, you got to show them that there's a place that their stories are going to be observed and heard so that they feel like they have voice. So that's why I chose to do that for them.
That's brilliant. I also feel as you're speaking that you are continuing the legacy of the teacher that inspired you.
I'm hoping.
I mean, not only her, but your family and your...
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Yeah. And I know when we talked before, you talked about the illustrations that you couldn't necessarily find the right illustration. And can you talk a little bit about how that came to be?
Sure. So I also wanted to honor Clara. And if she was writing the story and it wasn't me, because it is her story. And like any story, there's some things that I embellished upon in order to make it more education friendly and a little bit more deeper. But what I wanted to do is make it look like something maybe she would have drawn and she would have created. And when we're together, I'm still a lover of coloring. I color to calm myself or come up with new ideas when I'm writing. But I love colored pencils, and I wanted something that would look like that softer look of a colored pencil. And that was hard to come across. And I was trying to explain it as best I could by showing some of the colored pages that me and Clara had done. But I wasn't finding the right thing. And luckily, her father, Clara's father, Paul Matthews, who happens to be a designer, a graphic designer, and he runs his own business, but he works more in the medical business world and insurance and banking, and he does a lot of ad stuff for that industry. So he's never done a children's book. But for Christmas, as a thank you gift to me, he created the what he thought would be Claire's Curiosity cover. And he had it in a beautiful frame and gave it to me as a Christmas present, and with a beautiful letter saying how he thanked me for staying engaged with his daughter during the pandemic, and just getting Clara feeling like she was still connected to family. And when I saw this cover in this frame, I was like, you have got to be my illustrator. Nobody seems to understand what I'm looking for. And so luckily he said, well, okay, but as I have time in between jobs or this and that, I can't do any kind of deadline because this is just kind of my free time that I'll do it. And he turned around pages for me. Once he got going, he was surprised how quickly he got page layouts done, and he was excited to do them because yeah. he felt an ownership in showing truly through the eyes of Clara's lens, what does her house look like? What does her driveway look like? What did the little valley in there with the rocks, yeah. with the rock? Yeah. He experienced it with her. So there's no one else that could have produced these illustrations because he lived it with Clara. Yeah. And Clara was very informative to me and to her father to say, I think we need to put Domino and Snugs in the book, her two cats, and where they needed to be. And she was very much a part of page layouts and what she thought should be part of the book. So it was really nice as a family to do that together.
And imagine just the core memories that she's has of this experience.
Yeah. Now she's 8. And now she's like, I know what autographing means, RTK. So I can go to book signings with you and I can autograph my book. So you can see she's truly proud of her work, too. Oh, so that's fantastic.
And does she love reading?
She's an avid reader. She reads every single day. That's no lie. She reads every day. It's a routine. Of course, nighttime reading has been built into their family lifestyle. The rarity of her not reading, I would just say, is overplay or something like that and fell asleep on the couch beforehand. But majority of times their routine is read at night. And she actually, I find that their family dynamic is one where it's modeled behavior. Her mother and father are both readers. She sees them picking up books and reading. And I think it's really important for us as adults to remember that we are models of behavior. So for her, it's just a very natural thing to do. When she wants quiet time and she wants to get away from the adults in the middle of a day, she'll go pick up a book and sit in a corner and read. She sees us do that as adults. So she loves the Harry Potter books right now. She's reading Harry Potter series, and she's like me. She loves the roller coaster rides. We love to go to Harry Potter Park. So she has a big love for that. She's developed a real big interest lately, though, she told me, in ghost stories. So I'm anxious to see her this weekend and hear more about what book she's reading that brought her into that world.
Do you think other books will be inspired by Clara?
Oh, definitely. I think so. Well, one thing that I can share with the audience is I've decided that Claire's Curiosity is going to be a trilogy. I've written the second book, and we're in the editorial phases, and Paul has already started illustrations. He's going to remain my illustrator for all three books.
Really?
Yay! I'm overjoyed.
Yeah. That's incredible.
So book two. Yes. So book two will be Claire's Curiosity and Her Foxy Friends. Subtitle, From Forest to Sea. Clara will actually be worried because the foxes didn't return to her den like they normally do when they find a safe den. Maine gray foxes will return to a den and reuse that den as long as they have safety and water and food. You know, if there's a stream nearby they can go to and they're familiar with the area, they will go back with a litter every year and repurpose that den every year. So when I learned about that from the rangers, I decided Clara at the beginning of this book can't understand why the foxes haven't returned to her den. So she's looking for them and looking for them, and she actually sees the mom fox on the beach, which is why it's from forest to sea. And the foxes are going to be chasing after the little piping plover birds on the beach, are protected by Maine Wildlife. And I had a very long conversation about endangered species and the birds on the beach, the piping plovers. So the goal in book two is to still get children out into nature and curious about it, but to actually add a level of stewardship to the storyline where they want to help endangered species. So there'll be a lot of discussion about endangered species in book two and how Clara gets the foxes returned to the den near her home. So it's a lovely story. Yeah.
How exciting.
Yeah, and this was tough for Clara, I have to say. So this is her curiosity again, because she didn't know what the story is about, because I wrote this one all from, you know, my imagination here. And she was just like, what are you writing? And I said, it's a surprise. No author likes to give it away too soon.
Not too much.
Yeah.
So you talk about talking with Maine Wildlife and all these, you know, experts on foxes. I know you had talked about there's a fox day. Can you tell us a little bit about just that relationship to get the facts and the figures and all of that together for even both books?
Right. So I think it's important that even children, when you talk to them, when they're curious about nature, that there's a lot of research involved. And if you really are curious about something, you're going to research more and more. And I wanted these to be fun children's books that kids would be wanting to read again and again, but I also wanted to be factual. So I wanted to make sure if my story was going down a certain road that it had more meaning to it and it was something that they were truly learning from, that they can say they learned about the Maine gray fox and why it's unusual and different. And that's kind of one of the big aha moments I had with Clara, that there were things I never knew about the Maine gray fox, but my conversations with her made me realize that they have retractable claws. I've learned this from the rangers. They have retractable claws. They can climb 60 feet in a tree. I thought that was a four-year-old telling me a story. So when the ranger said to me, you were schooled by a four-year-old, I'm like, I definitely was. So it made me even drive further to make sure that I was using the accurate language around these foxes, and maybe even sometimes using words that were, in my publisher's eyes, too big for a picture book. But again, I went back to my mental thought of, you know, fourth graders could be using this book as a tool to advance their reading skills. Mm-hmm. So the word retractable claws, you know, a publisher would have told you to use something else. You know, they didn't really love that. But I do think it's important that we're talking and using the right language. We're being truthful about, you know, the facts of the story. And I think they're more meaningful to the kids. I think when they read these stories, they don't feel like they just walked away with just another fictitious storytelling, but more of like they learned something factual. And it's been kind of fun for me on my side of it, learning as well, because there's a lot of things we don't know as writers when we begin tackling a story. I've always been a big fan of historical novels. So I love history. So I think that part of me just wanted my books to really be factual. And the research is really kind of opens doors to other portions of my writing. It kind of helps open up possibilities of where my story can go.
I love that.
Yeah.
So just in terms of the bigger picture, children today are just, there's so many things that they're competing against just for their attention.
Right.
What do you hope that Clara's curiosity reminds us parents and educators about the value of just simply going outside?
Well, I think the best thing that can happen is that it will become more of a natural component that they do regularly, because they will build a stronger relationship with these individuals, whether they're an educator with these students or a parent. I'm finding conversations that I have with Clara in nature are very different than the conversations I have with her inside the house. They're more real, they're less surface, and our bond is stronger for it. And I just feel like it's a better opportunity to build relationships outdoors. I don't know if that sounds a little too huggy-lovey.
I completely agree with you. I think our family, we go on walks, and that's where I think the heart opens up a little bit more. There's not this, you know, you're kind
of focused on there's a lot of distractions inside.
Yes.
Get away from the distractions of things. Yes. I think you're more present, and you're present together with your mind and your thinking when you're in groups outdoors. Because if I find something interesting, I'm going to share it with Clara, and she's going to run over and look at something with me. And now we're discussing something in nature we found together. And she brings up stories all the time. Like one of our short little walks is in Saco, Maine. It's called Cascade Falls. If any of you are ever in the Biddeford, Saco, Maine area, it's a lovely little stop. Cascade Falls is a short walk. It's not like this long hike. I love to be in the woods. I don't go for 5 mile hikes, but I love to be in nature. And there's a beautiful little waterfall, and it's only like a mile and a half in. It's not bad at all. So we talk about that walk all the time, because the funniest thing happened. I thought I was taking a step on, you know, what I would call dry leaves, and I just kept sliding and sliding slowly, and I brought my bum down, and she got such a kick out of me just sliding down this little hill. You know, and it's a great memory for her because she helped me back up the hill. So, you know, it's a cute little memory for her and me, and just laughter, you know, laughter is so important. And I think that that goes back to that mental health thing that I believe in. And I think laughter fills our heart with joy and kind of helps us mentally if we're struggling with anything. So, yeah, so it's much more important than we know.
Yeah. So again, your story is incredible, and it really teaches children to appreciate wildlife without disturbing it. And I think that's what I love so much about it. Why was that message so important for you to include?
Well, there are dangers there with wildlife, so they have to know that. We have to be very certain that we're not making this sound like they're going to, you know, some great little place where they're going to pat wildlife. That they understand that wildlife needs its space. We need our space, and we need to be respectful of both of those areas. And in book one, I feel like I talk so much about find your green space. But in book two, the message is we all need our own space, which is the endangered species. Like, there's a reason why there are endangered species. We've overcrowded certain birds or animals, or we've allowed certain things to happen to our environment that have created these things for our animal wildlife. So I think we need to really kind of try to find great ways to show that. And I think in book two, where we talk about the endangered species, the kids really see it and understand it better. And that's why it's not just about safety. It's about you're being a steward. You're being respectful of the spaces we need, not only for ourselves, but for these precious wild animals. So I think when we deliver the story that way, and they think they're being a steward, it has a very positive indication there. And it allows them to feel ownership of the fact that they're being respectful out in nature. And it also is a safety.
Yeah, brilliant. So what would be your dream for Clara's Curiosity series 5 years from now, maybe?
5 years from now. I would love for it to be in the hands of so many children that read it again and again, but that schools and educators of all walks really start understanding the value of being outdoors and finding the time to really make it part of their journey. It to me, education is so unrespected today. And we really need to find respect for our educators today. And it's also going to help them to be able to be outside to teach. You know, there's a lot happening in our world today. And if we can make education a little bit easier for these individuals and help them teach outdoors, they'll be happier for it, you know, and it doesn't have to be daily. But I would hope that Clara's curiosity explains to the administrators of these schools that there has to be at least one outdoor classroom in these mortar buildings. Find a way to create an outdoor classroom in these mortar buildings. You will be so thankful you've done it for your students, but your teachers will thank you because they need the outdoors too.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to send that message to our Republican and our Democrats and all of those people out there that make these decisions every day, where our budgets go for our educators. But we need to do this. This isn't a question. Yeah. It just needs to happen.
Urgency. Yeah.
It is an urgency. And I'm thankful that last year I was invited to a school here in Massachusetts that had finally gone down that road and built their outdoor classroom. And I was lucky enough to be the first author that they invited to the outdoor classroom to do a reading. And the children loved it. And they all brought their little binoculars and we did a read the forest. So we read my book and then we did the read the forest. And it was marvelous. They even got the high school involved, where the high school did a little news interview thing that talked about me visiting the school on National Fox Day, which is September 17th. Yeah, every educator and parent should really like mark it on their calendar, plan something where you're going to go outside and talk about foxes, or bring them somewhere where you know there's a fox. Audubon centers oftentimes have a rescued fox, so you can go visit the Audubon centers and see a fox. But foxes are pretty amazing, just the way that they are, you know, losing space and finding their ways into backyards. And there's a reason for that. I've had children more and more curious about why they're not, you know, in the woods, and they found them in the backyard under a deck or something like that. So we want to have our children asking these questions, because they're going to probably solve these problems for us down the road. I want children to become stewards of nature.
And what happens with when kids and adults are afraid of the foxes because they are coming closer?
And I had one child tell me how much he doesn't like foxes. And I love having these conversations. I don't walk away from this kind of conversation because it's a real thing. But they have chickens in their backyard and the foxes are coming after their chickens, you know, and I explained to him, that's kind of a sad sign when they're coming after your livestock, because that means that they've been pushed out of some piece of wildlife where it's more natural for them to find their food for their families and their pups. But, you know, trying to make them recognize that we've pushed animals out of the woods with all of the homes we build, with all of the different, what we do to streams and things like that, that it's all connected. And usually they get a bit of an aha moment and they start sympathizing more and having a little bit more empathy with, well, why is that happening? Why did that fox come into your space and, you know, eat one of your chickens? And it's not about hating one animal over another animal. It's more about, can we solve this problem? And then it changes the conversation completely. They no longer hate foxes. They want to help figure out why a fox had to come into their yard. And I think that we need to, it's okay to have kind of really in-depth conversations with our younger children. They actually enjoy those more in-depth conversations. They don't want it to be overshadowed. You know, we can find ways that we bring up these hard conversations with kids. They probably have better answers to them than we would.
Right. And I think that's I'm so glad you said that, because I think that they're just bad. You know,
yeah.
And that's the end of the conversation. But to actually bring the curiosity in and to...
Why do you think that happened?
Frame it. Yeah, it's incredible. That's brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think there is a fear. I mean, I saw one walking down the street the other day here up in Beverly, and everyone's like, ooh, be careful, be careful. But can you tell me a little bit more about Fox Day and what people do and celebrate on Fox Day?
Yeah, so... National Fox Day is it is building some kind of awareness of our wildlife, not just with foxes, but, you know, with all of our animals. But Fox Day is meant to give us an opportunity to stop and think about nature. And the foxes in Maine specifically, it's pretty interesting when I did my research about them and about how they came from Canada and they worked their way down into the northern part of Maine. But now they're finding a way south into Maine. And it was building awareness that we are stripping our forests and pushing these animals southern. And these are northern foxes. And all of a sudden, they're being pushed so southern. And I forget exactly the gentleman who decided it needed to be National Fox Day. I forget his name when I did my research. I apologize, folks, for my lack there. But it was just impressive to me that they decided it was going to be National Fox Day. And we were going to talk about all wildlife, not just the foxes, and just kind of build awareness and stewardship and remind people how important our forests are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Yes. So I could talk to you all day long.
Thank you for that. That's so nice.
Amazing. So I have to finish with one question. When you look outside the window today, what do you see and what are you curious about?
Oh, that's a great question. So I'm looking out my window and I see my backyard. And recently, I've been neglecting my flower beds for the writing of book two. So they're very far overgrown. And I actually love my flower gardens, but I haven't been so great with them this year. However, I've noticed that because I'm not meddling in there so much, I have so many bunnies right now. I see bunnies everywhere. But not only bunnies, there is this massive size groundhog out there. And I instantly thought, could there be a story about a bunny and a groundhog and how thankful they are that the owner did not nest in their flower bed, because they have taken over this flower bed. They own it.
That's so funny.
That's kind of what I see, and my imagination flies with what that story might look like. And I actually have a really, really beautiful Formosa tree in my backyard. And it's beautiful to look at. And for those of you who are curious what a Formosa tree is, use a book instead of your phone. But you will be so amazed at what the flower looks like on a Formosa tree. It actually looks like a little feather duster. It's this beautiful flowering plume that is like literally like a little feather duster. And it's beautiful pink. It's a lovely tree to look at. So that's where I walk in my backyard to read a book under a tree.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Thanks.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with our community?
Sure. If you liked what you heard today and you're interested in Clara's curiosity, one of my favorite things to do is be in front of young minds. So if you're interested in having me join you, you can reach out to me on clarascuriosity.com. I'm in so many locations this fall. I'm all over. So maybe I'll run into you there. But I love communicating with educators and parents. Please don't hesitate to reach out to me. You can contact me through clarascuriosity.com. And I'd love to engage with you and hear more about what you're doing with your education for your students or your children. I love receiving photos of children reading my book under a tree. I'd love to use it in my newsletter. So stay in touch. I'm here. I might also be talking to you today, but if you're interested in being an author yourself and you're not sure how to make that journey, I'm certainly not a pro, but I'll share what I know. If you want to write a book as well, we don't have enough great books out there. So another one down the road would be a fantastic thing.
Ah, I love that. I love that. I love that you're also inspiring so many young readers to become authors as well.
Yeah.
I think that's so incredibly creative. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate your time, Victoria. It meant a lot to me to share this with you.
A special thank you to Karen Bellinger Richmond, author of Clara's Curiosity and Her Foxy Friends, for sponsoring the Outdoor Classrooms podcast during August, September, and October. We are so grateful for Karen's support and for her shared commitment to inspiring curiosity, outdoor learning, and meaningful connections with the natural world. If you or your organization would like to become a sponsor of the Outdoor Classrooms podcast, we'd love to hear from you. You can find more information in the show notes or visit us at www.outdoor-classrooms.com to learn more about the podcast sponsorship opportunities. Thank you for supporting the Outdoor Classrooms podcast and for helping us continue to inspire more learning, wonder, and curiosity outdoors. Thank you for joining us for today's episode. Before we sign off, we have an exciting opportunity for educators looking to bring learning to life outdoors. Consider enhancing your teaching journey with the Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. This program empowers educators to transform any outdoor space into a dynamic learning environment. By joining, you'll gain skills to inspire students and foster a deeper connection with the natural world. Interested in making a difference with outdoor learning? Visit www.outdoor-classrooms.com to learn more about enrolling in the certification program. Don't miss the chance to expand your teaching toolkit and inspire the next generation with the joy of outdoor education. Thank you for listening, and remember to subscribe to our podcast for more inspiring content. Until next time, keep inspiring young minds.